Welcome to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about craft beer and the food that goes with it today. Joining me is my regular co-host and WSU food critic, Rich Terapak. Welcome back, Rich.
Thanks, Ann.
And our guest co-host, Rich Terapak Jr. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And joining us now is Matt Barbie. He of Rock Mill Brewery in Lancaster and Rock Mill Tavern in the Brewery District. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You know, when we were talking off air earlier, we were all like, well, yeah, you've been on before. You're like, no. And it was kind of surprising that you hadn't been on yet. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
You know, we talk about craft beer a lot these days. It's a booming industry all over the place. Tell us what it is for those who might be listening and are unsure. And what the different distinctions are.
Sure. Yeah. We're in this kind of craft beer renaissance right now that's just exploding and very exciting and very unknown. I think everybody's kind of wondering how far it's really going to go and is there going to be a big correction?
Is there a bubble somewhere?
Yeah,
out there?
Exactly.
A bubble.
Yeah. And people are, you know, there's evidence of that already, but ultimately, it's kind of just a beautiful thing that's kind of, you know, everybody's getting their own brewery now, and that just kind of brings the community together. So it's exciting.
What makes it craft, I guess? But, you know, is it
small batch?
Yeah, is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Technically, it's a smaller production. So you're producing under a certain amount of barrels a year.
Okay.
A barrel in beer terminology is 31 gallons. So it's a small boutique production as opposed to, you know, a regional brand that's going to have a, you know, over 250,000 barrels annual production.
And that's of each individual variety that you do to stay under that limit?
It's combined.
Oh, it's
combined. Okay. Production.
So interesting.
Everything that you produce will be included in that.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
There was something in the paper this morning that is relevant to what you said about how long it would last. Is it Lagunitas, something like that, out of Chicago, pretty big brewery, was laying off 100 employees out of their 900 employees.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end of the article, you found out they're owned by Heineken's.
Yeah, I think that's a good example of kind of could mark the peak of the industry, you know, when they were purchased by Heineken for a very large sum.
Half of it was $500 million, so I imagine the second half was even a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think that might be referred to as the peak for a lot of people at this point.
You're listening to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. We're talking about craft beer and the food you eat with it. Our special guest today is brewer Matt Barbie. If you have a question or comment about craft beer, if you want to share your idea of great craft beer in Columbus, where you'd like to go to drink and eat with it, give us a call. Tell us what you think. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Matt, is the big change been in Central Ohio and I guess, you know, the nation on a larger scale, been the introduction of food to the story?
Yeah, you know, when we started our brewery down in Lancaster, Ohio in 2010, we were always sharing the beer in the context of food pairing. And it was such a new experience to share with people and really enjoyed kind of the educational component of that. And as more and more people are getting introduced to craft, it's you know, more and more people are doing beer dinners and thinking about designing specific food items with a specific beer to pair it with. And it's really come on strong. And I think so many people are realizing, you know, myself included, you know, I kind of had a haughty attitude towards beer and food for a long time growing up. I would enjoy beer. But when it came up in terms of context of food, I was like, oh, well, I want to do a wine pairing. I want to do something dynamic.
It's burgers and fries and beer and wine is something fancy.
Yeah, exactly. And then for me, being introduced to Saison, which is in the farmhouse ale category, I found it to be extremely depthful and dynamic and all these like very subtle flavor nuances that were beautifully paired with food. So it was Saison, the beer style, that opened up my world to beer and food and ultimately just found it to be such a refreshing change of pace mixing it up. You know, it wasn't wine and dinner every time. It was like beer and dinner, and then wine and dinner, and just kind of, you know, it was nice to have access to both worlds because they're very different but very complementary.
When you started in Lancaster, let's talk about the water in Lancaster because mm-hmm. that's a big deal for you. And tell us why there and why that water.
Absolutely, we have such a fortunate situation where we're situated. We have the Hocking River kind of runs through the property, so Rockmill Farm is situated at the headwaters of the Hocking. And we have a lot of Black Hand sandstone. A lot of people here in central Ohio are familiar with the Hocking Hills area. And the rock formations down there are comprised of Black Hand sandstone. So we have a lot of that rock on our farm, and our wells drilled down into that rock and filtered by that rock. It imparts this minerality that when you analyze the water and you put it up next to the water from Wallonia, Belgium, the southern portion of Belgium where Cezanne originated, it's an ideal match. So it's a perfect minerality for the styles of beers that we do. A lot of different Saisons and other beer styles from Wallonia. We're a Belgian-style brewery. And then where we're situated towards the head of our watershed, any chemicals from neighboring farms in the area, that all flows downstream from our water source. So it's an exceptionally pure water as well.
Did you look for that?
You know, I was studying the water of Wallonia. And then, you know, thought about how important water was. I'd never really thought about that before. And then it was suggested to have our water analyzed. And I was like, well, that's a wonderful idea. And when I got the analysis back from the lab, the first thing I did was put it up next to the water from Wallonia, and my jaw dropped. I was like, oh, my God, this is such a wonderful match here.
Wow.
So very fortuitous that, you know, the specific style that I was honing in on that the water was just perfect for it.
But you said that you can tweak the water to make it work if you're not as lucky as you are.
Absolutely. You know, there's people brewing beer all over the world with different types of situations, many on city water. But, you know, a creative brewer can make certain adjustments and deliver a wonderful product. It's just kind of a luxurious situation for us to have that all be, you know, just ready to go. And we have a wonderful recharge center to where the well is located. If you look at all the wells in our area, it's basically a flood zone. So, you know, if we were to put a very large brewery and brew around the clock, we still wouldn't even touch the water table. So as, you know, awareness of water as a precious, you know, limited resource becomes more and more prominent, I just think we're going to become more and more thankful of where we are in the world and just having that, you know, plentiful, clean water.
Interesting.
Yeah, you just skip a step. And you've been at this now for 8 years?
Yep. We opened up September 2010.
Yeah. And folks can find the product throughout the city of Columbus now, right?
Yep, throughout Columbus and the state of Ohio.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And by the way, they're bigger bottles than the usual ones. It's more
yes.
of a wine bottle size. It's
Is that a Belgian beer thing?
It is. It's classic to Belgian beer. They're 700-milliliter bottles with cork and cage enclosure. When I first tasted Cezanne, it was presented to me in that format. And, you know, I was like, this is a beer? It looks like wine to me. And,
uh-huh.
and then when the server kind of popped that cork, the aromatics wafted over. And I was like, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is a beer? Are you sure? Because this is a gorgeous bouquet. And so we really work hard on the bouquet of the beers, and we kind of stick to that classic format. So we have that large format bottle, which is exciting. You have such a beautiful canvas to work with, you know, artful designers and creating, you know, an exciting kind of brand with that canvas.
You guys have great labels, I got to say.
Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, no, and a lot of times at a beer shop that, you know, or a wine shop, that's what people base their picks on. So.
Strangely, kudos. I mean, when you don't, particularly if you don't know
if
much,
you don't know,
then you go for
what's
the pretty picture.
Exactly.
We're visual beings, right?
Exactly.
You know, I've heard the quote, you know, 50% of the wine purchase is the liquid, the other 50% is the label. And the same goes for beer, you know? What catches your eye, what stands out?
I think also that with a Saison beer, you know, these are higher alcohol by volume beers. They're not the kind of beer you you know, drink six of in a night. Exactly.
Babies.
It's more of a fine beer and something you drink slowly. And I think a 22 ounce is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. Can you put the cork back in?
if you've got a corker like we do. Yeah.
All right. So you immediately started pairing with food.
Yes.
Out at the brewery in Lancaster.
Mm-hmm.
And got great reviews on everything you did out there. Was it the natural, obvious next step is to open up the brew pub on Front Street in the brewery district?
Yeah, I feel like that was kind of, you know, only a matter of time, just because when I moved back into the area, the first thing I did was start to explore the food culture of Columbus. And I'd been gone for a decade at that point.
You know, big change, huh?
Yeah, big change. And was so excited to see all these new restaurant concepts coming up and just way more options than when I'd left. And so, I was exploring the landscape, you could say, and came across a lot of talented chefs, one of them being Andrew Smith, who we became friends and would do collaborative beer dinners together often. And so, again, it felt like a matter of time before we could kind of introduce a restaurant concept to Columbus. The tasting room being down in Lancaster, a lot of people had this perception that it was like an hour away, you know, or very far. And so we thought we could maybe eliminate that barrier and create, you know, an extension of the farm and a tasting room in Columbus where people could share the beer, experience it in the context of food, and then hear the story of the farm and make their way down there too.
But to be a brew pub, you have to meet certain qualifications in Ohio, right?
That's correct. Technically, for me to own a restaurant, I need to have it be a brewery because I do have a manufacturing facility, you know, in my name. So they require you to be able to produce beer on the premises of all your locations.
But it doesn't have to be everything you serve, just something.
That's right. That's right. For example, at the tavern, we have an 8-barrel fooder, which is a wooden fermentation vessel. And, the restaurant's been open for about 2 years now. And we've filled up the fooder with wort, you know, upon the opening. So we actually just pulled our first couple of kegs off the fooder. And it's this beautiful stone fruit sour. Excuse me. And so that just came on tap at the tavern. And when we pulled those kegs off of the fooder, we immediately replaced the volume with fresh wort from the farm. So the bacteria, the wild yeast are continually working on these sugars, these fermentable sugars. And it's kind of exciting what happens, you know, over the course of time, in this case, over a year, almost to 2 years, just how dynamic it can become. And it will continue to evolve, utilizing the solarium method where the same kind of ecosystem remains intact throughout the evolution of the beer.
Why do they call it solarium method?
It's you replace immediately what you pull.
Okay.
And it's traditionally used for mixing. So, you know, with Scotch, you have a lot of mixing and blending going on by the master blenders to kind of ensure this level of quality.
And for those who aren't familiar with sour beer, it's really the traditional way that beer used to be made back in the day. Most beers are made in a very sterile brewery environment, whereas sours incorporate wild yeast and bacteria and take much longer to ferment, like Matthew was saying, and come up with really unique, deep character profiles as far as the taste goes.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Thanks for explaining that. I never did know.
Well, it's chemistry.
Smart
and
stuff.
I was stunk, at chemistry. So we're going to continue our conversation. We're talking about craft beer and the food that you enjoy with it. Our special guest today is Matt Barbie. He is the owner of Rockmill Brewery in Lancaster and Rockmill Tavern in the Brewery District on Front Street. Also with us, Rich Terapak, our co-host and WSU food critic, and our special guest co-host, Rich Terapak Jr. So what do you think? Where do you like to drink your beer? beer and what do you like to eat with it? Give us a call, 614-292. You won't hurt Matt's feelings if it's something other than his. That's why we bring these guys on. We want, in fact, one of my first questions to Matt later on is going to be, where do you like to drink? What do you like to drink when you're not at your own place? So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City on 89.7 NPR News.
Jolly good fellow, I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, and we're talking about craft beer and the food that goes with it today. Still with us, WSU food critic and co-host Rich Terapak. Rich, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Ann.
And co-host, our special guest co-host, Rich Terapak Jr.
Good thanks to be back. Again. Thanks, Ann.
Yeah. And owner and brewer at Rockmill Brewery in Lancaster and Rockmill Tavern in the Brewery District, Matt Barbee. Matt, thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
So, I'll kick it off with what I ended it with when we left off is, where do you go? What do you like to drink when you're not drinking your own?
Yeah, you know, fortunately in Columbus now, it's almost hard to keep up. There's so many fun options. But one restaurant brewery downtown, Wolf's Ridge, has been an exciting place to go. They've right out of the gate, they really were you could tell they're really focusing on the food execution along with everything else, which, you know, it's easy to think of that as potentially being an afterthought with a brewery.
Mm-hmm.
But really, really enjoyed, being able to go there. And then, you know, the food truck culture, right outside of Land Grant, they've got Ray Ray's Barbecue, which I'm a huge Ray Ray's fan.
Yeah.
He's actually kind of he'll swing by and just give us a pig for the chef to break down at the tavern from time to time. So
wow.
We really appreciate his gifts when he swings by with them.
You know, when you talk about it that way, this is something that pops up a lot when we talk about the craft beer thing, is that it's such a community. It's competitive in a healthy way. Seems friendly.
Oh, yeah. There's collaborative beers,
right,
that are made,
exactly,
between different brewers in Central Ohio.
Yeah.
And I couldn't agree more about Wolf's Ridge. I think Dad and I co-authored a blog post for WSU about 2 months after they opened, and we were both absolutely blown away. We really didn't expect it. And, I mean, I'll never forget that mussel dish, kind of smoky one.
Yeah.
The andouille. I don't think they have it anymore, which is sad. But they've kept it up. They've been doing a great job. Their chef was, I think, voted last year maybe the best chef in the city by, you know, Columbus Monthly, whoever it was that was taking the poll.
One of the list makers. Yeah.
But yeah, they were kind of a pioneer in the food part of it, and they do a great job.
Yeah, I think with Matt's place and Rockmill and Wolf's, you can it has improved the quality of food in Central Ohio a great deal. And, you know, I think both of you guys are on the top 10 list of a bunch of list makers.
Right.
And I guess it's also encouraged some of these other brewers to, I think I counted 14 in Columbus craft brewers who offer food. Now, the level of the food may not be quite at the
you
same
point. You mean
quite.
Themselves without food trucks?
Right.
Okay. Because that Matthew mentioned that as well, that food trucks have, you know, been a great synergy with a lot of these smaller breweries and brew
Seven
shops.
Sons, yeah.
I mean, I know I go to 3 blocks from my house, Green and Grape in Bexley, quite a bit, and they have food trucks there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights. I mean, every single night you can always get food when they're open. And I also wanted to say they recently came under new ownership about a month and a half ago, and the new couple running the place, Adam and Samantha, are foodie industry veterans. I think she was a sous chef at Flatiron, and they do seem to really get it. They're keeping the place
open. Oh, that's great. I haven't been there since they changed the ownership.
Yeah, keeping it open till 11 each night. It used to close at about 9:30.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you haven't been by to visit, it still looks the same, but I think they're doing a great job.
Yeah, good.
So, Matt Barbee, your chef, how did you – you know, I know you became friends first, and he's still with you, right?
Yeah, Chef Andrew Smith. When I first moved back in the area, he was cooking at the Rossi. And I would love to go in there. And there was one night I was just kind of just chatting with him, and he asked me the question, you know, were you interested in maybe trying a couple things off the menu? And, you know, I lit up and was like, absolutely. So I kind of made that a tradition where I'd go in there and he would just cook for me and my friends. And,
wow.
And it gave him an opportunity to be creative, which is very important to him, to be able to kind of flex in that way, because he is so passionate about what he does. So, you know, it was only a matter of time before we would do beer dinners together down at the farm, where he'd have like kind of six different entrees and with six different beers. And you could just see people really enjoying the process so much of being able to kind of learn more about the etymology of specific beer styles and explore how exciting it can be with different kind of foods.
And you do flights at the restaurant, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fun to do. And so if you go with a group and somebody has the burger and somebody else has the sous vide carrots, you can, you know, test them out.
Well,
it's fun.
It's nice, too. Just I often joke that my favorite beer is whatever I didn't drink last. I literally, if I go into a bar, I never drink the same beer twice. I have my favorites, of course. But I do think that it's a great way to allow people, especially who like variety,
yeah.
to, you know, taste a bunch of things without having to order, you know, six pints of beer.
Without getting smashed.
Right, exactly.
And for me, a lot of times, it's the alcohol content does dictate what I do that night. Do I have a driver or not?
Right.
Kind of a thing.
Sure.
Generally,
yeah.
you want to Uber into most of these places.
That'd be a good idea.
And they're only
or walk three blocks like I do.
Yeah. Corey in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Corey.
Hey, Ann, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for Matt. You're known for your Belgian beers, of course, but with the surgence of dad beer, you came out with a Pilsner in a can.
Yep, yep.
And I'm just curious, what was your thought process behind that, and what made you want to do that?
Yeah, we were interested in kind of producing a lighter style beer, something extremely sessionable. I am a big Pilsner fan, and we had a lot of conversations, myself and Zach, the head brewer now, about, what kind of Belgian angles can we kind of add to the Pilsner style. And, we were just so excited about producing one that, we decided to, have that be the brand that we would introduce our first can with. We thought it'd be a great fit for that format.
Sure.
As most people are aware, the can format is extremely popular now with craft and very much a driver in that space. And for us, being kind of the large format Belgian style brewery with that focus, we thought it'd be fun to kind of mix it up and do something that was kind of a departure from our portfolio, but it would be kind of a good fit for that new format.
I think one of the reasons Rich is as good at tasting beer as he is because we sent him off to Prague for a semester,
yeah.
and he to become cosmopolitan.
I've had quite a few Pilsners.
Yeah. Well, the buck a beer thing in Prague.
Yeah, I was there in the year 2000, my senior year of college, and we actually had a bar in our dorm basement,
yes.
and liters of great Pilsner, Staropramen, Krusovice, were 40 cents.
Yeah.
it was a dream come true for a 21-year-old boy.
And you stayed on the honor roll. It's amazing.
I did.
And that's where Pilsner was invented, you know, in Czech and Bohemia.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about that water is exceptionally soft. So the opposite side of the spectrum.
Right.
From,
so do you use the same water?
We do use the same water, but we soften it. We
okay.
treat it so that it's ideal for that different style. It requires a softer
water. I had your
water.
Pilsner last night, actually.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, we've really been enjoying it. And the can is so much fun, so
well,
we're excited to finally
can?
Roll
why,
that out.
Why is the can getting to be so popular now? I know grocery stores are pushing for it.
Yep. I think it's just so convenient
and
portable. You know, you can take it on a picnic. You can take it canoeing, cabrewing. it's just such a flexible format, easy to transport, easy to keep cold.
Yeah.
And there's something about it that's very fun. So I think there's this kind of inherent energy surrounding it that just gets people excited.
Yeah. Now, I know you're new to canning, but have the steel tariffs or anything like affected? Is that going to be a cost issue if that comes up? I know Campbell's Soup, was mentioning they'd have to raise prices on their soup because of it. Is that in any way affect the beer industry?
You know, we're so brand new to it. I'm not really sure what's coming down the pike with that, but.
But yeah, and most, I'm a home brewer and I bottle it, just because I don't have a canning machine. But a lot of people believe it preserves the beer better than capping bottles.
Particularly, it's a very efficient sealant. So with certain styles, particularly like fresh IPA type styles, it's wonderful for maintaining that kind of fresh hop aromatic.
Mm-hmm. I think of, I buy cans of Stone Ripper quite a bit. That's like that. The Hazy Jane from BrewDog, which is one of my go-tos now. Yeah. It's only in a can.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's those very aromatic IPAs, and it does lock in the freshness, I think, better than a bottle does.
It was funny. We Roberta and I was going to say Richard's mother, but I'm going to name her. Roberta and I just got back from partying with a bunch of friends in England and in Scotland. And BrewDog is all over the place, of course, over there. And you saw the cans everywhere. And when somebody would ask where we were from, and we got around to saying Columbus, Ohio, everybody knew Columbus, Ohio because of BrewDog.
Put it on the map.
Yeah. Wow. Right. So we were internationally known, at least in Great Britain. So.
Well, there's a hotel out there now.
Yeah, the Dog Tap, is that right?
I don't know. Is that what it's called? The hotel is
That's
called
right.
the Dog Tap?
Uh-huh.
There's a dog park and a play area.
The rooms have beer taps in them. Oh. But I was told, I was like, oh, my God, I could do so much damage.
This could be so wrong.
Yeah. And then I was told that the beer they're putting on tap in their rooms is their sour, which you're not going to overdo it on typically. At least I'm not. Sours are great, but you don't drink more than two of them typically.
You know, their production facility isn't far from the farm where our brewery is located.
Yeah.
And they've just brought a lot of energy down to our area. Yeah. It's been wonderful.
Canal, Winchester, Lancaster, they're like joined at the hip.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Great group of folks over there.
Yeah, spread the love. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. Tell us what you recommend for your beer drinking pleasure and eating. 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. It's All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. And joining us today, Matt Barbie, owner of Rockmill Brewery in Lancaster and Rockmill Tavern in the Brewery District. Also, Rich Terapak, our co-host and WOSU food critic, and Rich Terapak Jr., our guest co-host today. Well, IPAs are the most popular style of craft beer, and I'm wondering, are they as popular with brewers as they are with the customers?
That's a great question. The IPA craze is quite the phenomenon, and honestly, a lot of the brewers that I'm close with, many of them are very passionate about IPAs. For them, the craft beer scene in Columbus specifically, being so young as it is, they kind of came on through the IPA and it still maintains that special place in their heart. So, brewers and consumers alike, very passionate about it. There is this, people refer to it as hop fatigue. it's such this force that, even myself, sometimes I'm like, it'd be nice to talk about something other than IPAs every once in a while. And me personally, I'm a Saison guy. I enjoy a good IPA, but that's not kind of where my passion or heart lies. So, many brewers just can't make enough of it and love it. And what's fascinating now is the different styles of IPA, the way that's evolving. Is interesting.
Like hazies, you mean? I've noticed those seem to be kind of in vogue.
What's that?
Hazy, where most IPAs in their incarnation were clear.
Yeah.
And brewers would say, can you read a book through it? Nowadays, there's a big move to a cloudier IPA where they use less fructulent yeast that doesn't eat up the sugars quite as quickly, and it kind of leaves more of a bouquet behind. And I've noticed a big move towards those lately. And also, I think, you know, double IPAs did get a little overdone. There's some that, you know, are practically undrinkable anymore. But, you know, there's those others that, you know, kind of find that perfect balance, like, you know, Bell's you think of. Or is that an American pale? Can you tell me what the difference between an IPA and an India pale ale and an American pale ale is? Well,
you know, it's such a popular category that all those lines are being blurred. Okay. And there's a lot of innovation within the IPA category right now. And so it's been, I think, for people who are passionate about IPAs, there's kind of always something new to try these days, which is fascinating. Like we just brewed, you know, an IPA that was kind of in the New England style, and it only has 8 IBUs. For those of you who aren't familiar with that term, it stands for International Bittering Units. It's how you measure the bitterness levels in beer. And so IPAs are known for having very high levels of IBUs, you know, 40 to 60 range easily. And so to only have 8 IBUs in an IPA is a brand new concept. And in this particular case, the focus is completely on the bouquet. So you have all these beautiful aromatics and something that's still exceptionally sessionable, and it doesn't have a bitterness that really kind of like slows down that pull.
That's the second time you've used that term, and this is why I'm on the show, is because I'm the ignorant one. What do you mean by sessionable?
It's synonymous with poundable.
Okay.
You can have an afternoon with it where you're at a ball game, you're drinking multiple, and it's light enough where, you know, you can hopefully still enunciate by the fourth quarter.
Wow. I'm glad I asked.
But not Bud Light. You know, like a New Belgium Daybreaker or something like that. Yeah. You know, they're typically between 4.5% and 5% alcohol and very drinkable. You know, hot day beers.
Yeah, I guess I always thought that the introduction to IPAs, because I don't drink a lot of beers, you probably can tell I'm still stuck on gin and wine, but and scotch from time to time. It was sort of like an introduction to wine. You know, you might start off liking white wine because you drank Vouvray, and then it got.
That is how I started to like white wine, was Vouvray.
Yeah, and then
strange.
And you got more sophisticated, and all of a sudden
you're
drinking the dry Rieslings or something. So So I think that's what it is. I think it's just people leaving perhaps the Bud Lights and moving on up the line. So.
Yeah, and it's great when you really like something to have a couple of them. You know, be able to have more than one. You know, a lot of craft beers out there aren't designed for that, and one is all you'll be able to handle. You know, one will be the showstopper, and that's wonderful. But it's nice to also have that lighter session option when you can have a few of them.
Your pounding option. Okay, are going to come back with more translation about craft beer today with Matt Barbee, owner of Rock Mill Brewery in Lancaster, Rock Mill Tavern in the Brewery District. Take your questions and your comments. Where do you like to drink your beer? What do you like to eat with it? Also with us, Rich Tarapac Sr., my co-host and WSU food critic, and Rich Tarapac Jr., our guest co-host today. So 614-292-8513 is the number to call. If you want, you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City on 89.7 NPR News.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about craft beer and the food that goes with it today. Of course, that's what's whatever is new in the Columbus food scene as well. Still with us, WSU food critic and co-host Rich Terapak, guest co-host Rich Terapak Jr., and our special guest, owner and brewer at Rock Mill Brewery in Lancaster and Rock Mill Tavern in the Brewery District, Matt Barbie. If you have questions about what's new in the food scene, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Sad farewell now to the Columbus Brewing Company,
That was too bad.
What went on? What's the deal?
Well, I think, you know, they changed ownership. There was a battle over the name and CBC, and they were going to go off and do something else. And then, as I understand it, I can't recall his name, but the owner is ill. And with all the other challenges, he just thought, we're going to close shop.
Now, I had heard that was affecting the restaurant side of it. Is the brewery side also?
No, the brewery side is okay.
The brewery is completely separate.
Yeah, it's completely separate. They've sold the brewery side sold to the restaurant.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, which leads me to another question, Matt Barbie. You know, you were a brewery with a tasting menu. You know, food pairing menu in Canal Winchester, or I mean Lancaster, and now you've got this full-blown restaurant.
Yep.
And I wonder just how it changes the dynamic for you as, you know, you work to create this business and how it changed for you.
Well, the restaurant business is completely different from a brewery business.
Right.
So out of the gate, that was quite a surprise. I suppose I should have been expecting it, but just a completely different business model with a separate set of challenges. But, what we've been focusing on from the beginning at the tavern and has been so exciting is, you know, that whole element of being able to taste a number of different beers in one setting. And also being able to kind of try different food pairings with each beer. So the way that's set up, you know, we'll have like a cheese charcuterie board or a bread and fat dish or, you know, where you get three or four kind of dishes that everybody can kind of communally share together. Mm-hmm. And you're all kind of focusing in on beers with different food items and kind of sharing your experience out of that. But also being able to offer kind of elevated tavern fare where you can, you know, get a ribeye or an amazing, you know, chef-driven designed hamburger. And so it's
great.
It's
burgers. But.
Yeah, uh-huh. The burgers are wonderful. I have dreams about them. And it's been fun to watch people when they come in and they're excited to take that journey. And let us kind of lead them down that path where, they're coming across a combination of things that they haven't in the past, and that's part of the fun. You know, what I like to tell people is the number one rule in all of this is knowing what you like. You know, what are you most excited about? Because all of our palates are so individualized, and you know, it's so contextual. Like what you're tasting today. What's going on with your palate today could be completely different from tomorrow. So it's something that's ever changing, and to be able to share that with your friends and loved ones is so exciting, you know, because you can share out of your passion what you've discovered and then learn from others. But just realizing that we're all approaching it from our own unique angles and that's fluid. I think it's exciting and encouraging. A lot of people can be a little intimidated. You know, wine had this perception, it wasn't quite as approachable, maybe. And the one beautiful thing about the beer culture is it is so collaborative with everybody getting along so well, and it's so accessible. People can kind of dive right in knowing that they can learn as they go. And, you know, beer, you don't necessarily have to come up with fancy descriptors for it. You absolutely can, but it also can simply just be good.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. You say it's collaborative, and I note that the Ohio Craft Beer Association, I think, has in Central Ohio like 44 members, which is pretty amazing. And that has to have developed over the last 10 years. There's an app that I think everybody should know about because it advertises a bunch of stuff, including the festivals and what may be new. It's Ohio on Tap.
Right. So new releases, because breweries do small batches and put out special releases that and beer nerds, you know, get to know their shop owner and wait for that stuff to come out and get it before everybody else. And no, it's great. I mean, it's, you know, it's just like wine used to be.
Yeah.
No,
in a good way.
In a good way.
Yeah, and I like Drink Up Columbus, Cheryl Harrison. She's fun to follow as well. She's the top blogger, I think, in Central Ohio.
Jim Ellison, Columbus Brew Adventures. Yep. If anybody wants, you know, a 4-hour education to really, you know.
Good blog post.
Yeah, great blogger. That's, ColumbusBrewAdventures.com. They go around to usually 4 or 5 different breweries and shops, you know, just tap houses as well, growler shops, and introduce to you and talk to you about the different stuff you're tasting. It's a very good education.
Yeah. Jim was the first blogger to do a piece on Rockmill, and this is before we even opened. He reached out to me. He's like, hey, I'm going to be in the Lancaster area doing kind of a donut tour. Could I swing by afterwards? I was like, absolutely.
Was he a policeman? No.
We were just talking about donuts and beer earlier, how it's an exceptional pairing.
Well, there is an event coming up. I think it's this weekend.
What is it?
It's at the Combustion. At Combustion, which is in Pickerington. They have a donuts and beer festival going on. I think it's 11:30 to 1 and then 2 to 4, and you pair. They've got several different donut bakers contributing to.
Who knew? Again, it's just a dining editor for Columbus Monthly last year called your weekend brunch one of the best in the city, not just with a brewery, just one of the best flat out. So brunch and beer, you know, a lot of people just associate beer with lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
Mostly dinner.
Or football.
Brunch
can be a very exciting kind of beer pairing forum. You know, my favorite brunch beer, and I was just talking about this last night because we're sponsoring a tailgate that, you know, for the noon kickoff versus Minnesota, we're going to be out there, you know, 9:30 or so. So you got to have the right beer for that time of day.
Right.
And we have a Belgian stout called the Rugged Expanse. And just love drinking that with brunch pairings. You know, we have these spicy biscuits. A stout is going to have roasted barley. So the level of toast is a direct correlation to the color of the beer.
Okay.
So with a dark toast, you get a dark color. But along with that comes a lot of different flavor components with, like, the toast of it. You know, you can get smoke, bacon. A lot of these flavors that you can kind of associate with brunch.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. With things that go good with eggs.
And yes. And you want that heartier mouthfeel. You know, you don't want it to be too viscous where it becomes cloying.
Okay.
But if you have an exceptional mouth coat, then you have this scrubbing effect with the fattier elements of
almost
the brunch.
Like coffee, a good coffee?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. It kind of allows your palate to gain separation from the fat and the foods, and that's where a lot of the elevated flavor components, where they can complement each other, where you're perceiving elements of the food and the beer that you, when you're having them together, that individually you wouldn't perceive.
Yeah, I mean, I guess brunch and beer, that's not new. There's tailgates.
Yeah. Right. Right. Exactly.
What am I thinking? Yeah, of course.
But that's seasonal.
Yeah.
Yeah, this you can do in February at the restaurant.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we have Dima commented on Facebook that Wolf's Ridge Brewing is his top craft brewery right now. Is there room? I mean, I know no one ever wants to say there's not room for more, because it is such a collaborative, friendly community of competitors, I guess, or whatever you want to call them. But
it's kind of like Dine Originals among the restaurants in the Congress. Yeah,
yeah.
Rising waters lifts all boats. You know, that kind of an attitude. And I guess Columbus is just getting bigger,
right?
The time.
The talk about saturation was present 3 years ago when it came to breweries, and you haven't seen many go out of business.
No.
You know, and I think that has to do with the younger population that we have in Columbus, and the fact that, you know, millennials and whatnot are liking, you know, to drink craft beer.
Yeah.
Well, and you're not, when you go into a bar, you're not just looking at craft beer, but you're looking at craft spirits as well.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that being locally made as well. And there's
and they're also doing good food.
The
Watershed and
right.
Midwest. And mm-hmm. now what's the High Point is the most recent one of Orange Good Ale.
What I like to tell people is that at one point in history, a third of the world's breweries were in Bavaria, southern Germany. So that means basically a brewery in every village. And we're heading back to that place, which I love. We're going to have a brewery in every village, and there is room for that. Each town can support a brew pub. But there is this. It is becoming more competitive, right? So when you step beyond that village, when you step beyond that brew pub concept, which is essentially selling everything that you produce with a retail margin in your hometown. That model, I think, is going to continue to thrive. But when you step beyond that, the moment you step beyond that and you start doing the wholesale business and starting to expand into other regions that also have the thriving local producers, that is a tough space to be successful in without a massive amount of resources. So, again, there's room for more, and when you do go to a place you've never been before, you want to see what's being produced there. So
yeah.
That's why I think it's so exciting. And everybody will kind of have a brewery to call their own. While we continue to see growth there, that wholesale play, that regional craft window, where some of these national breweries, Lagunitas, Stone, are starting to see some layoffs, and that's where the corrections are beginning to be felt. They're in a completely different competitive scenario, with very large players. So with smaller craft, organization, it's tough to compete at that level.
I'm lucky enough to live in Columbus, and I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is another big craft beer.
Great beer culture.
Yeah.
Up north.
Where do you make sure you're checking in on different communities around the country once in a while?
It's hard to keep up. I would love to have the time to go on more kind of beer adventures, but I've had friends kind of touring over to the Vermont area and a lot of breweries, cropping up in the mountains there and down towards Asheville. It's exploding everywhere. So
Dwayne in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Reason I'm just calling in is you guys are talking about really great food pairings and, places that seem to be putting the food and the beer forward at the same time and trying to work together. I just want to give a shout-out to Three Tigers Brewing in Granville, Ohio. They do wonderful Vietnamese food and all kinds of stuff,
great.
And their tap list is awesome.
You forget about Asian beers, but there are a lot of those around. So that's good to know.
Beer's
Thank you.
Big in Asia. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Dwayne.
Shanghai.
Yeah, no problem.
Just wrapping it up, is there what do you think sets apart Ohio craft beer?
In some sense we were a little behind the curve, but when the craft beer surge hit here, it hit so powerfully that we've just had this rapid expansion in a very short amount of time. And with that could cause some, some growing pains, right? I've just been very impressed with the collaborative nature has been kept intact.
Yeah,
all these new players coming to the scene and being welcomed by, the OGs, in the marketplace. So I think that's what I love about the Columbus brew scene is with as much growth as we've had in such a short amount of time that people are really enjoying doing it together and maintaining that collaborative spirit. So it's a great place to be. The openings the last few years has just been astounding. So it's always something new to discover while you kind of have your old favorites simultaneously.
And you still got your home brewers like Rich.
Although I can't brew it fast enough to drink it, so I'm still buying plenty of other stuff.
Well,
yeah, oh. It's great that the collaboration is continuing. It's also exhausting for those of us who try to get out and try all the new restaurants.
Well.
BrewDog has opened three already. Land Grant's got something. You got food trucks all over the place,
Worcester
so slow
just
down.
Expanded. They have another room.
Yeah.
Seventh Son has their patio atop now, Yeah, always something new to talk about, new to look at,
and
new
it's
to drink.
Oktoberfest, for gosh.
And then there's exactly, which is why we scheduled it.
And we
for
haven't
October.
Mentioned that word.
No, we have.
Fall is beer season.
It really is. Yeah.
Before we run out of time, I just wanted to enter a quick plug. Dad and I are going to be judging at the Taste of Bexley on Monday night at St. Charles.
Okay.
It's $35. There's upwards of 30 restaurants. It's a great event, so please come out and see us.
And plenty of beer.
All right, of beer. Taste of Bexley. Matt Barbee, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Matt Barbee, owner of Rockmill Brewery in Lancaster and Rockmill Tavern in the Brewery District in Columbus, and also Rich Terapak Jr., our guest co-host. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.
And Rich Terapak, co-host, WSU food critic. Good to see you again, as always.
Thanks, Ann.
And thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.